Mosquitoes are just a piece of it. You know, mosquitoes are, for our business model, this is maybe a little bit of secret sauce, but I don't care. This is the good stuff you get on the Pursuit of Profit podcast.
Welcome back to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Andy Fuller, founder of Mosquito Hunters. Today, we're discussing how Andy's negative corporate America experience drove him to self-employment, how he created a customer-first culture, the evolution of the model incorporating three businesses into one, and how his company is making millions by exterminating the most hated insect on the planet. We hope you enjoy the show, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays. All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions.
All right, man. First of all, let's say this. There is no species more universally hated by humans than the mosquito. Everyone hates mosquitoes, so we appreciate what you're doing here, protecting us from these horrible beasts.
Yeah, you can look it up online. It's literally the deadliest animal on the planet.
So I want to go back to the beginning, because you, like a lot of other founders that we've had on the pod, you did the college, you know, painting in college thing, which was cool, right? You enjoyed that. You got your taste of the entrepreneurial bug, but then you ended up taking the corporate path after graduating from college. And your experiences there, while not so unique to us, because we hear these stories all day long, are, I think, very relatable to a lot of people out there who are exiting corporate America and considering small business ownership.
It's so true. It was a similar experience to what I've heard from a lot of franchisees. You know, we've made a couple of videos where I kind of tell my story. We include that in our communications to folks that are looking at Mosquito Hunters franchise. And they will come to me by the time we get to training and they'll say, "What really made me realize I was aligned with you guys is I watched that video where you talked about your experience at corporate America, because that was my life too." And I'd say the only difference between me and a lot of our owners is I had the benefit of having owned my own business in college. And so I knew there was a better way earlier than I think some franchisees really get to have the benefit of realizing. So I was in school. I needed money to pay for my tuition. So I started a college painting business, and that was a means to an end. And I came to realize, you know, I got towards the end of college, I'm getting my degree, and I'm thinking, I think I actually learned a lot more about business. I know I learned a lot more about business from operating this than I ever did sitting in any classroom. I just loved the creation where you literally start with nothing and you say, I have no customers, I have no employees, and I need to somehow make money on the other end. So for painting, it's, I'm going to be knocking on doors in Michigan, where I'm from, in January, February. There's 6 inches of snow on the ground. No one's thinking at all about getting their house painted. But I need to talk to these folks, get some people who are interested, sit down at the kitchen table, get the down payment check, and then build a team, then build the relationships with the folks at the paint store, and then train everybody on how to do a good job. And then at the end, we've given the house a nice facelift. Everybody wins. The customer's happy. Their home is in better shape. The employees are happy because now they have money. And then if you really do your job well, there's some money left over for you. And that's the reward for being the owner, for taking on the risk. I loved it. I loved that journey. And then I got to the end of my college experience and I had my degree, and I wanted to use my degree. I wanted to see what I could do. And in hindsight, it was so naive, but I really looked at some of these big companies. I wanted to move to Chicago just because everything happens in Chicago after 2 or 3 cups of coffee. So it's very similar culturally, but just a bit more energy, and everybody's right. Exceptionally motivated here. I just love it. But I wanted to move to Chicago. I wanted to work for a larger business, and I just wanted to experience what it's like. Now, there's this job that I really wanted. It took me a couple of years to go through the process. I got this job and I looked around once I got the job and I said, this is it. Like, I'm going to climb this ladder. I'm going to play this game. I'm going to see what happens. It's really great money. I get to travel and go to great places. I get, you know, car allowance. This is great. Like, I'm going to be here for a while. And then like a year later, I took a look around and I realized I hate this. this is, it's like the movie Office Space in real life. Like, I didn't realize it was a real thing. It sounds so naive. It's, you know, everybody, you know, is all about self-preservation. Nobody wanted to build anything. It was about, how can I get my bonus? How can I do as little work as possible? To survive was to be what people would call Teflon. You know, I'd never heard the word Teflon used in that context before, but if you were good at your job, that meant that you were Teflon. In other words, like, nothing stuck to you.
Untouchable.
Untouchable. Yep. Which meant that you don't get blamed for things, because the worst thing you can do as corporate America is make a mistake. And so if that's the worst thing you can do, that means no one takes any risks, which means all anyone wants to do is maintain the status quo and just stay under the radar and effectively hide under their desk, but just come up every once in a while, once a quarter, to see if they can collect their bonus. And I hated it. And I had the benefit of knowing that there's a better way, because I knew what it was like in college, as simple as it was, just building a crew and trying to create customers from nothing. You know, doing the math, it's actually not that hard. Like, I'm working hard now in corporate America. I worked hard then. I actually have a lot more upside, and I'm in a lot more control of my destiny if I just do it on my own. And I knew that I wanted to get into a space that leveraged all of my learnings. I did learn a lot of things in corporate America. I learned some good business maneuvers. I learned a lot with the college painting business, but I wanted to do something different. I knew that I wanted to do something in home services, because home services have great, first of all, great gross profit margins. They let you have great net profit margins. With the wiggle room, they let you take some risks and big swings. But the problem with most home services is that they're not renewable revenue. I really love the painting business. I know there are some great businesses out there doing real things with painting right now. I've never really liked that you don't have recurring revenue. I really like building your house out of bricks. So you start a relationship with a customer, and then you keep servicing that customer year after year after year. I mean, jump forward to today. You know, I started my business here in Chicago in 2014. We still have customers that we've had relationships with for 10 years. And that's really cool. I could never do that in the painting business. So jump back. I wanted to get into recurring revenue, home services, something where it was early, something where there was opportunity to innovate and differentiate, and not just try and come up with the lowest price. I didn't want to get into one of these race to the bottom type businesses. I wanted something where I could learn enough to be dangerous in a reasonably short period of time without going to trade school or back to school in any capacity. I didn't want to be an employee somewhere else. I didn't want to be an apprentice. I was ready to go. I wanted to lead, and I didn't want to be at the mercy of my employees. And then I wanted something that provided some value to the community where I could really take pride in it and tell a story. So that led me to Mosquito Control. And where I'm at now, you know, I know we're going to talk about where Mosquito Hunters is gone, but I look back on my career at this point, I've had the benefit of really getting into the right space at the right time, basically three different times. So once for Mosquito Control, then for Pest Control, and now for Holiday Lighting. And Mosquito Control in 2014 was just, it was an amazing time to get started. I had people coming to me saying like, oh, you should be on Shark Tank. There's a service. You created a service that gets rid of mosquitoes, thinking that I invented Mosquito Control. I didn't, but it was really a great time to get started with that business, Mosquito Hunters.
Love it. And I love your story about, it really resonated with me because I've been here myself a couple of times. You shared a story about a boss who stole your ideas and then presented them as his own, which was, that really brought me back to two bosses that I had. Andy, I had a boss, because I'm a, you know, high energy idea guy. It doesn't make me right. Doesn't make me brilliant. Mm-hmm. I'm just a high energy idea guy. This guy literally pulled me aside and said, can you do me a favor? You come to these meetings with the executive team with a lot of ideas. Why don't we meet first and you share them with me? And I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. I actually had to look this up to understand. And I really wish psychology should be just what makes people do what they do? What makes a boss who's supposed to be the leader of an organization meet with his executive team, take your idea, literally present it to you and everyone else as if it was his own? So to look up a true narcissist, right? These people are skilled. They're narcissists, but they're skilled. They get promoted, they become bosses, and they feed on people like you and I, like parasites. They literally take our energy, they take our ideas, they suck the life out of everyone around them, They go into meetings, they present these ideas as their own. And when they become leaders, they never modify their behavior. They transition from narcissist employee to leader, and they forget that now you're supposed to be working on enhancing the skills of other people. And it is just wild to me how many times I found myself there. And the conclusion is simple. And no, you don't Google this and you don't sit down and talk to this boss. You leave. You cannot sit down and rationalize with a narcissist boss. You literally have to make an exit plan and hope you don't land with another one.
It's so true. You said it, they get rewarded for that kind of behavior. So you behave like that. It's like, hey, let's give this guy a raise. Because the game is make the guy above you look good. That's how he got that raise in the first place. Kiss the pinky rings, make everybody look good. You know, don't make any mistakes. Don't get caught making any mistakes.
And if you do make a mistake, you have to take credit for all great ideas and pass blame for all bad ideas and failures, right? My wife would ask me, she's like, you're usually good at this stuff. Why is my boss doing this? Why do they behave that way? And what you have to understand with a narcissist is that they actually view their team being successful as a detriment to themselves because they're the narcissist.
Yes.
I have to get the recognition. Yeah, but you're the boss. This is your team. They're doing really well. Yeah, but at my expense because I can't take credit.
Right. They're threatened.
But I'm going to say something. I truly believe this. I feel when I look at your brand and what you're doing Fortune 1000 moves. I could tell you well-read, well-educated. I could tell you dig in. You look at success around you and you're really just saying, I'm going to execute off of what I already know works. Right? So tell me more about the culture you're creating, the things that you've implemented in the brand and how you're taking this to honestly be a household name. I believe you'll get there.
Thank you. I think culture is supremely underrated in business, especially in franchising. The people make the difference, you know, bar none, and you need to have alignment on what that is. So we have a core value in our business. When in doubt, over-communicate. We want to err on the side of over-communication, which means that we'll repeat ourselves sometimes because I'd rather repeat myself than assume that you know what I'm talking about. So culturally, you know, we have a lot of innovators in our team, a lot of collaborators. We really welcome franchisees to share feedback with us. You know, you look at franchising, some of the best ideas have come from franchisees. The Big Mac came from a franchisee. The $5 footlong came from a franchisee. The Filet-O-Fish sandwich came from a franchisee. Some of the best innovations we have today are due to us listening to our franchisees and giving them a vehicle to share that feedback. The reason why we're in holiday lighting so aggressively right now is because we listen to franchisees. The reason why we've made so many moves into commercial pest control is due to us listening to our franchisees. So I think there's no better way to grow a franchise system than kind of have that kind of relationship with people on the team.
My favorite culture line, and I don't remember where I got it, and I live by this, Justin knows this. You have to be unreasonably selective who you allow in your culture. And I mean unreasonably selective who you allow in your culture. Your quote is, you know, we're not in the mosquito business, we're in the customer service business. Like you kind of redefine who you are.
It's to earn the loyalty of the customer, you know, every single day, which, you know, is never a given. So we have to find, you know, not think about how many mosquitoes can we kill. We think, how can we make sure the customer has an amazing experience? Because if we've earned that, then we can leverage that in other ways. So first of all, we need really high retention. So any franchisee should be having minimum 80% retention year over year. So that way, as you're adding customers, your customer base is like an annuity. This is the beauty of recurring revenue, is those customers are going to have mosquitoes again, or the holidays are coming again, whatever. But let's just focus on mosquito. They are going to come back next year and the year after that. That's not the question. The question is, what can you do as a business owner to increase the probability that your customer is going to rely on you to solve that problem when they have it? So it's not about, oh, we kill more mosquitoes than the other guys. We provide a better experience to the customer, so we've earned their loyalty that way.
You have heard from so many exciting franchise brands in a podcast, and you may be sitting there thinking about which ones could be the best fit for you. If this is the case, give us a call. We provide a free consulting service to prospective small business owners like yourself, and we will help you take a disciplined approach to determining which brands could be the best fit for you. Call or text us at 561-277-3710
or visit www.franosity.com. That's www.franosity.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
As a franchisor, you have two customers, right? You have the homeowner, the end user, and you have the franchise owner. And when you talk about culture, it's all about people and relationships. There are a lot of people who in franchising who would say money and profits cure all, happy. And Cliff and I have been with brands where even the franchisees who were making money despised the franchisor. They hated them, right? They just didn't have that culture there. I remember we were part of a brand. So you've shared some stories about conferences that you've held. And, you know, what do we do? Where do we host these events? Should we do something big and lavish? And some people are really attracted to that. And you said, you know, let's just get people in a room and have some drinks and get to know each other. And it reminded me, Cliff, of a brand that we were with where we had the U.S. operation was massive and had some really successful franchisees, but no one was happy. Then you had, I don't know if you remember, the Canadian operation where all they did, they had a separate little conference. Their conference, get a hotel room suite and let's have some drinks. They drank together and they freaking loved each other. I mean, they hung out. They were all best friends. Ultimately, it's just all about having great relationships with your franchise owners.
Yeah, you can have a real flashy, splashy party, but that's not going to build your relationship. You know, and that's our mission statement. Our business exists to build extraordinary relationships with our customers and with each other. And when we provide support, these relationships grow. So that's just it. It's like any opportunity we have to provide support to a franchisee, like that's our huge opportunity. So I will always jump to a call if a franchisee wants to talk or text, email, whatever it is. Like this is my opportunity to strengthen that relationship. We see it as we're the Sherpas with them climbing up the mountain. I go through this during Discovery Day, during training. I believe it's not really a customer relationship. I believe it's not an employer-employee relationship. The closest analogy I could make would be to the Sherpa going up the mountain. So I am not going to drag you up the mountain. We're not carrying you. You got to get up there yourself. You're going to carry your backpack. You're going to carry all your tools. Now I'm here with you because I've gone up and down this mountain before, but we're going to do it together. You're not alone. But there's a certain moment of pride, and I know I feel it. I know you guys have felt it as business owners too, when you've done it for yourself. When you've gotten to the top of that mountain with your own two legs, there's nothing like it. And that's, to me, that's what franchising is. And I'm not going to rob a franchisee of that by doing their work for them.
Absolutely. As you should. Hey, go back to, because sometimes we have founders on here, they just drop like these little KPIs and, you know, no one really hears it. And it just, the conversation keeps going. Go back to the retention rate, because we just went right past it. That's a big deal.
Yeah, it's huge.
What is this? This is customer retention from season to season?
That's what you should be doing.
Okay.
For Mosquito from season to season. That's the target that everybody should have. If ever you're below 80%, something's gone horribly wrong. Because again, think of the customer's perspective. Think of what their need is. It's not a question of if the mosquitoes will be there next year or the year after that. It's just who's going to solve my problem? Oh, it's almost like it's yours to screw up. You know, once you've gotten in, the cost of acquiring a customer, you know, is always going to be higher than we want it to be, but it's so much more worthwhile the longer you keep that customer. But that's why I love recurring revenue, is your customer is a golden goose as long as you treat them really well. I couldn't get that when I was in the painting business. It was one and done. You know, you try and, you know, of course, do a great job for the customer, but you try and squeeze as much profit out of that project and then you move out and you're trying to fill the funnel all over again.
What are the acquisition costs?
The acquisition costs vary, but I'd say if you can do something at $300, then you're in a good place. But for us, key driver is focus on sales, making sure everybody on your team knows how to sell. So technicians, especially on the field, upsell. So that way you can boost the lifetime value of the customer. So add another $300 to $400 per year by getting a mosquito customer onto Perimeter Pest or a rodent control program or both. And then the big one that I love, of course, is holiday lighting. Because these customers, it's a need when it comes to pest control or even mosquito control. It's definitely just a want with holiday lighting. But with holiday lighting, we're talking about a $2,000 per year charge on average for those to do it. And whereas a customer will ask some questions of like, do I need to spend an extra, you know, $300 to $400 on this service for pest control? That same customer might be a lot more willing to spend $1,000 on an upgrade on a holiday lighting package, which, by the way, serves no pragmatic value. It just makes people feel really great and it looks amazing.
Andy, I want to get to the three different business models. It's basically three different businesses, if you think about it, all in one. I want to get to that. But before we do, with Mosquito, I mean, all this is great, right? Company culture and retention rates and all that. I have presented this business model enough to know that the listeners at home are thinking about one thing right now. What animals am I killing and what am I doing to damage the environment? I'm telling you, that is like, I've been shocked. That's like the first thing that comes up for people, which is great, right? They care about, you know, I have these little lizards living in my yard. I have these bees here. I have, my daughter loves the little frogs we have. What are we killing? Are we killing dogs? Are we killing bees? What solutions are we using? Is this eco kitten pet friendly? Ease our concerns here.
This is one of the greatest misconceptions in pest control, is that it's causing, you know, a lot of harm to the environment. The active ingredient in the products that we use is the same active ingredient that's found in flea and tick shampoo that's used with pets, or in head lice medication that we use with our kids. It's the synthetic of the chrysanthemum, you know, in different forms. A pyrethroid is the one that's most common. Or even if we're talking about a smart repellent system, you know, we're talking about a metafluthrin. Anyway, it's either way, it's the synthetic of the organic compound found in the chrysanthemum flower. And we're applying that to a lot of the broadleaf plants because mosquitoes get their energy from the broadleaf plants. They don't get energy from our blood. It's only the female mosquitoes that bite us. They use our blood only for reproductive purposes. So going back to what you're saying earlier, Justin, like the mosquito, everybody hates the mosquito. It's literally categorized scientifically as a parasite. It can't exist without stealing blood from people and animals. And that's the problem. But the other thing that's great too is there have been so many advances that have happened in pest control and in mosquito control just the last 5 years alone. So for example, mosquito stations have nothing to do with spraying. They are stations that are filled with a little bit of water. They kind of look like a flower pot, and on a property that's a half acre or less, which is most customers, about 3/4 of our customers across the country are a plot that's a half acre or less. We put out two of these stations filled with water, pure proxifen, and a fungal bioactive that's totally natural. And it's on a gauze that sits on water that floats. Its water is about 5 inches of water. And the mosquito is coming into that pot, if you will, that station, to deposit eggs. Well, when it comes in that zone through static electricity, it takes on the pure proxifen and it takes on that fungal bioactive, and it takes it with it everywhere where it's depositing water elsewhere, because that's basically all the female mosquito is doing, just looking for water constantly to deposit eggs. As it's depositing those eggs in those other water sources, it's spreading all of those fungal bioactives. So basically, you can't breed everywhere where that mosquito has touched now. It has nothing to do with spraying. That is like a game changer for the world of pest control and for being, you know, environmentally responsible. It's something that I could have only dreamed of 10 years ago. And so it's a really great time to be in the pest control industry, where we can really reset expectations with customers, educate customers to let them know we're actually doing a lot more good than a lot of folks realize.
Okay, so in many cases, you're not even having to spray anything.
We have some franchisees that are doing that today. I'd still say the majority where we're still spraying, but we're spraying this product that's, you know, the synthetic of the organic crop out front of the chrysanthemum flower. We even have a lot of all natural options. Now, I want to mention this too, because we get a question a lot about dogs from consumers. It's funny. We have a call center, right? And we quote and close on behalf of the franchisee in the call center. They call in. Those are their questions. Is it safe? How long does it last? Do you have any kind of guarantee? Is it going to hurt my dog? Is it going to hurt my kids?
Dog first. Always the dog first.
So dogs can only get heartworm, you know, through mosquitoes. So if you look up the American Heartworm Society, their logo is a mosquito. Only time any dog ever in the history of dogs has ever contracted heartworm, it's been through a mosquito bite. So dogs love us because, you know, we're saving lives, really.
Yes.
Not to be like too pious about it, but if you really think about it, we have kennels that we treat, and These are dogs that aren't getting regular flea and tick treatments. They're not getting heartworm medication. If we're reducing the population of mosquitoes, we're reducing their exposure to one of the things that's most likely to kill them when they're in a kennel. So yeah, huge misconception. If somebody's concerned about, you know, I'm killing the world or I'm killing the environment, okay. It's actually quite the opposite. We're doing a lot of beneficial things.
That's excellent.
Is there anything patented, anything proprietary, any type of blend, or just everything is approved?
No, I really never wanted to play that game. I think there's a lot more upside for us if we focus on loyalty of the customer as the North Star. I know we have some competitors that have tried to play that game. Honestly, if you kind of read between the lines, there's really nothing that's truly proprietary that's there. And I mean, we use different products. Our franchisees use products. Some work better in the Midwest where I am. Some work better in Florida or Texas. Some work better on the East Coast. We want to give them that independence and flexibility. We give them guidance and they share and collaborate with each other. But there is no magic bullet in pest control. You need to have that kind of flexibility. There are plenty of great products that work. That's a unilevel decision. Decide what you want to use. Otherwise, your North Star is earn that loyalty of the customer to make your business more valuable.
Are you seeing that Florida or Texas or, you know, south of the Mason-Dixon, are you seeing them not embrace the holiday lighting because they really don't need to? They're busy year-round?
Dude, I'm glad you brought that up. It is more embraced in Texas and Florida than it is anywhere else.
Why not? I mean, it's such a great revenue stream. They're probably making more money doing one holiday install than they are even on the spraying all year.
Yes. And the consumers really want holiday lighting because the people who live in Florida and Texas are guys like us who are from the Midwest or the East Coast who moved down south and they're in Florida or Texas in December and it feels weird. And so it's very common for people to put up lighting there more so than it is up here.
What's the average ticket on the holiday lighting?
$2,000.
That's consistent. Yeah.
That's the thing that's great too, is there's a lot of opportunity with commercial as well. We had franchisees
absolutely.
Who do Chick-fil-A, other QSRs, Horse Stable was one, Homeowners Association. I mean, that was the biggest ticket of all when those are done. By a huge upside. And then the value prop is a little different for like a restaurant, but it's great because like you can attract people. You become a social media destination when you've got a cool light display. For us, it's a much bigger ticket than it is for a residential job. So
80% retention rate, enviable, love it. Call center, I just heard. So you're answering the phone, you're scheduling the estimates, you're handling all the appointments.
Not just that. So it's not just scheduling appointments. In most instances, aside from holiday lighting we're scheduling, but for everything else, pest control and mosquito control, we're quoting and closing over the phone. Now, that's not to say that franchisees don't need to sell. You need to know how to sell. You need to know how to train everybody on your team to sell. Everybody is in the sales department, you know, when you're in this, even the technicians. But it's really helpful to have that first line of defense because honestly, I've sold a lot of things, you know, earlier in my career. I've never sold anything as easy and simple as a mosquito control job. It's a great foot in the door for all these other things that we offer, like pest control.
We talk a lot about mosquitoes, but I'll tell you, man, I personally got bit by a tick in 2008, and I had the exact same symptoms as malaria. It's one of the worst experiences of my life. So you also treat ticks, fleas, spiders. I mean, you're doing way more, especially with some of these, you know, I'll call them chemicals, right? Or do you call them insecticides, or what's the proper term?
Products is what we call them. You're good. You like that?
Products.
The products.
Oh yeah, I got face products, right? Because now it's like it's a hair product, it's a face product. It's just another product.
So talk about this progression though, right? So we started with the mosquitoes, then we roll out what we're calling perimeter pest control. So all the other insects, pests, rodents, and then the holiday light. So talk about that progression and what does that mean to the franchise owner as far as added equipment, different types of branded vehicles? What does that mean? Did we just complicate this very simple business model?
That was the key, is we want to raise the upside for all of our owners and we want to work with empire builders across the board. So I said, as we add on these service lines, we need to keep this very simple. Not easy, because it's never easy to own or run a business, but simple. There's a difference. And so that means having the same vehicle. So for the vehicle, once we made this shift, we switched from what we were using was the Ram ProMaster City, a smaller commercial vehicle, to a Ram ProMaster 3500, which is a lot larger. It's like a billboard on wheels. It's co-branded for mosquito hunters and for Humbug Holiday Lighting. And then that's the same vehicle that gets used to generate revenue 12 months out of the year. So we started with mosquito control going back to 2016, 17, 18. You know, we were targeting franchisees the same way the other mosquito blank, you know, franchise companies were targeting. And value proposition is to the franchise owner, it's, you know, seasonal business, work-life balance. What do I do during the winter, Andy? Oh, you do whatever you want to do. And what we realized after a few years of doing that is we're really limiting the upside for a franchisee when we kind of invite them to be a side hustle Sally or a bucket Bob, you know, right out the gate. So instead, we realized we want to work with franchisees who want to build really big businesses. We had franchisees in both camps early on. We shifted focus to saying, we want to work with people who want to build empires. People who are really dynamic, who want to generate revenue 12 months out of the year, who want to get to the point, you know, they come into Discovery and they tell us, I want to create generational wealth for my family. You know, that's who we really work the best with. And so we want to give them as many tools as we can in as simple of a way as we can, so that way they can get there. So that's kind of where we're at. And that's why we have these different revenue streams. You start off using mosquito as something that's good and profitable and recurring, really easy sale, but that's your foot in the door to talk about pest control, ants, spiders, rodents, fleas, ticks. In most parts of the country, that's going to extend your season significantly. Otherwise, you would still have a pretty slow period in October, November, December, January. And that's where holiday lighting fits in so perfectly, like a glove. You can leverage your same employee base. So I still own the original location here in Chicago. Up until we got into holiday lighting, that was our albatross. That was the hardest part of operating the business, is dealing with employees and employee retention, because you're inviting somebody who's going to be highly seasonal. So best case scenario, you get students, people like that, who are looking for work for a brief period of time until they move on to something else. They get their degree or whatever. But otherwise, you're attracting the kind of person who just goes from job to job and just kind of floats around. And it's really hard to manage employees like that. And it's really hard to reset every single year and start from zero or close to zero employees. But with having mosquito control and pest control and holiday lighting, you keep your best and brightest and they stick with you year after year.
The other thing that I'll mention really quickly, Cliff, is I think a lot of people don't realize the difference when it comes to like the operating model of a home services business, the difference in owning a business where your employees are not entering the home, right? We don't have to worry about theft. We're not worrying about breakage. We're not worrying about disrupting this family's life. The customer probably doesn't even care like what time we show up. Like they're 5 minutes late and now we have a 3-star instead of a 5-star review.
Right. Well, and just scheduling alone. I mean, hey, we're here for your treatment today. Oh, sorry, we're at the grocery store. Can you hang on 30 minutes? Like, we don't have to deal with any of that when we're not going inside of the house.
Absolutely. I love that you're on the exterior of the house.
There's a huge benefit to that.
Right. I spoke to a guy yesterday. This guy had already failed in a prior business and he knew exactly what he wanted. And I go, man, you sound like you've been listening to our podcast. Like everything he said is just echoing what we talk about. I don't want brick and mortar. I want non-brick and mortar. I don't want construction. I don't want a landlord. I don't want personal guarantees. I don't want it. This guy learned so much from one failure. And I give him a ton of credit, but he's coming back for more because now he feels like, I learned so much. Yes, I failed, but I'm going to fail forward. I learned a lot. I know exactly what I'm going to do in my next business.
Good for him.
Benefits of taking action, failing fast, failing forward, and roll it into the next thing. Love that.
The fact that he's getting back up to do it again is a huge indicator
Admirable.
That he's going to do well. Yeah,
I agree. On mascots, I don't know if you've looked. I figured you were going to tell me, you know, how you came up with all these ideas. If you think about the most iconic brands in the world, they almost all have mascots. Think about it. Look to Tony the Tiger. That's 1950s. Look at Ronald McDonald. They only got rid of Ronald McDonald when clowns started stabbing people in the UK. And remember that? They only got rid of him because of that clown.
They said there's no such thing as bad publicity. I think that might be the exception. consider me more of a Tony the Tiger guy than a Ronald McDonald guy. But yeah, there's huge upside. I mean, we had a guy on our team until he retired, Tom King. Hi, Tom, if you're listening. But you know, he's that everybody's a kid deep down inside. So you just got to find ways to appeal to the kid, whether it's a business owner, because your heart has to be invested into the business too, or any of the consumers that are there. I think there's something to that with the mascot deal.
Totally. Do you want to hear a cool mascot story?
Yes.
Do you ever look on a box of Morton Salt? Does anyone know what the logo is?
It's the girl in the yellow raincoat.
Wow.
Boom.
Great job.
How weird is that? Yes, exactly.
Very observant.
Exactly. Well, this is what brings me to this story. So the girl on the salt is running through the rain with a box of salt sprinkling behind her. So it's like, why? And that's the tagline. When it rains, it pours. Because back in the day, we didn't have climate control, humidity control. Everyone had to put rice in their salt shakers because the salt would cake up. So Morton Salt came up with the idea, let's put a girl in the rain and our tagline will be, when it rains, it pours, meaning the salt comes out of the shaker. They used magnesium to do it. They don't do that anymore. And that was the whole tagline. I'm fascinated with some of these marketing things. I find these stories and I just love to know, like the Wendy's girl, it spells mom on her shirt. I don't know if you know that. If you look at the Wendy's, her lapel actually says MOM. These companies are always putting messages inside their logos. There's always a reason behind it. And the reason behind mascots is actually a psychological strategy, which I thought you were going to tell, establish trust. It's like anthropomorphism, where you treat a non-human entity like a human. You give it emotions, like Smokey the Bear, like it's a bear, but we don't view him as a bear because he's wearing clothes and he has your hat. And we instantly build trust and respect for this bear that tells us, don't light fires in the woods. And you're like, okay. But if my father said it to me, it's like you're instantly playing with matches. But when Smokey the Bear told everyone to do it, it's like, okay, we're going to listen. And so I like what you're doing between your uniform and your mascot and the puppet and the videos.
I think there's something nostalgic about having a mascot where this didn't exist, 11 years ago. But there's something that feels, I'm pointing to the logo. And so this didn't exist 11 years ago, but there's something that's memorable about it. It feels nostalgic. It feels like you've seen it before. And I think that helps to build trust with the consumer.
It feels like a brand that's been around for a cliff. How often do we walk into a business when we're traveling and look at each other and say, like, this feels like a brand, which is one of the biggest differences between your typical mom and pop mosquito control company and something memorable like a Mosquito Hunters that feels like a brand.
The more you lean into the brand, the lower your customer acquisition cost, by the way, too.
That's right.
So let me show you something cool. Speaking of brand and mascots, sorry to anybody who's just listening, but you can go to Humbug Holiday Lighting. So
we're looking at a Humbug Holiday, winter hat.
Winter hat.
Very cool.
You want to see what the shirt is?
Is this the uniform?
This is the uniform. Everybody wears this. So then imagine, you're on the job or up on ladders. You can still see the contact info. So you can say, oh, I want to get a quote for my house. But this is our mascot for Humbug. Scrooge getting tangled up in lights. Go to humbugholidaylighting.com if you want to see
that. Good plug. So the pest control is obviously operating as part of Mosquito Hunters. You roll out Humbug Holiday Lighting as a separate brand. Are the franchisees paying a separate franchise fee and buying another business? Or no, this all comes packaged in one?
For the existing franchisees, we had a nominal license fee just because we invested a significant amount of money into building this out. We did it as a pilot with a few franchisees. And so for those that were already existing to absorb it, there was a nominal fee just to put some skin in the game. But otherwise, for any new franchisee who comes on, it's just all included. It's 3-in-1. Every single owner who comes on signs up with the intention of building an empire. Mosquito control, pest control, Humbug Holiday Lighting.
I'm buying the lights. I'm assuming I'm buying really high quality, like commercial grade lighting. I'm basically, for $2,000, renting them to the customer for 3 months, something like that. At the end of the season, after New Year's, I remove them, store them, and then next season I'm renting the same lights again without having to buy more lights.
As the owner, you're using the same lights. You own the lights. So the customer does not own the lights. They don't acquire the lights. They're always, you know, for you, the business owner, you maintain ownership of the lights. But the beauty is you're charging the customer the same amount. So we said $2,000 was the average, $2,000 in year one, $2,000 in year two, and so on. You charge the same amount, but you don't absorb that material cost in year two and beyond. And so typically the material cost is about 30% of the price. So you can do the math and realize what that does to your bottom line in year two and beyond.
Right. So your main CapEx is year one, and then you start seeing the margins grow season after season.
The margins are already strong even in the first year, and they're like crazy strong. Honestly, like a lot of our franchisees say that their favorite part of what we do is holiday lighting.
That's incredible. I was surprised. I don't know if you could talk about gross margins. The gross margins are strong even in mosquito spraying. I was surprised.
So yeah, I'll say for item 19 reasons, I'll say in the industry, you know, what you can see is you can see some pretty healthy gross margins for sure. You think of what your expenses are. It's labor and materials and your royalty. Those are your COGS. Everything else is after that. So in the industry, you should be seeing a gross of 60-70%. And in the industry, you should be seeing a net of, you know, 20-30%.
You have an item 19 you can share with us?
Okay. So the best way to break this down, and this is how we do it in item 19, is, you know, break it up into the chunks of mosquito, pest control, so everything that's not mosquito, and then a holiday lighting, you know, from there. So we already talked about holiday lighting. You know, that's $2,000 average per year. For mosquito, it depends on where you're at in the country, because the further north you go, it's less treatments per year. The further south, it's more. So it's as low as 8 treatments per year. It's as many as, you know, 17 treatments per year. And you're seeing revenues of $750 a year to $1,200 a year for mosquito. And then for pest control, everything non-mosquito, right now what we're seeing is $300 to $400 per year revenue. And I think there's a lot more upside. I think there's more opportunity that franchisees are digging into, but that's what we disclose.
Okay.
That's your item 19 is broken down, revenue per customer.
Right. And then we talk
about... But there's no way to back into the number of customers?
You can back into... Yeah, we share the customers too. So the number of customers. Yeah. So at the high end, you know, we have franchisees, 500, 600 customers. You look like smack dab in the middle because we break it up into quartiles. You'll see somewhere around 200. You know, it's standard in the industry to be getting about 150 customers per year. You can see, you know, our numbers speak to being more aggressive than that, more successful than that. So 200 is like smack dab in the middle. We've got some that are more aggressive than that. And then you figure out those revenue numbers per service line that we have: mosquito control, pest control, or humbug, holiday lighting. And the trick is get as many customers as possible to do all three of them.
An investment range, 140 to 170 for a single territory.
Yes.
And that's including all three revenue streams, equipment for all of it.
Yes. That's marketing, that's coming out to training. So we do training in waves. So you come out for mosquito hunters training and learn everything with pest control in that same wave. And then right now we're doing it once a year, every August. This new class will come in for humbug holiday lighting and do the humbug training. That's a separate 3 days. We have 1 day dedicated to how to sell it, 1 day dedicated to more of the operations side, estimates, materials. And then we have one full day where we're just out in the field. Everybody's getting their hands dirty, getting up on ladders, putting the lights up.
Very cool.
I also like this model because it's a vehicle. It's one tech per vehicle.
Yes, one tech per vehicle for pest control and mosquito control, and then two techs per vehicle for holiday lighting.
I like that. What is the amount of revenue? What is the revenue target per vehicle? What should a vehicle generate per year?
We should be doing, well, you back it out, you know, during mosquito season, you should be doing 1,300 per truck per day. That should be anywhere from 6,500 to 9,100 per truck per week. And then just kind of spread that out over the course of the entire mosquito season, depending on how long your season is or pest control season, which varies per location. And then what's great about holiday lighting as well is it has nothing to do with the weather. It has nothing to do with where you are in the country. You heard what I said, $2,000 per customer. You can do two to maybe three customers per day. Two is more common. So two customers per day. You can start doing installs as early as September, you know, if you know how to position it the right way with the customer. And then our season goes until about December 15th. That's when things start to slow down for installations. So as far as how you perform those installations, it's whenever you can make them available. You could have two different crews going. You could do four tens, you know, for 4 days of the week, and then do three tens for the other 3 days of the week. You could be going 7 days a week if you get those customers lined up.
A founder who knows his numbers.
Yeah, love it. Yeah, we touched on a lot. Customer acquisition costs, a lot of people don't talk about. Item 19, we talked about retention rate, multiple services, what makes you different.
I would say with customer acquisition cost, this is maybe a little bit of secret sauce, but I don't care. This is the good stuff you get in the pursuit of profit. Like we really, really push franchisees focusing on what we call ground game. So minimum, you need to be putting out 500 lawn signs, put out door hangers. We use the mascots for what we call parking waves, stand at busy intersections. You know, we use our mapping tools to find out what are the busiest intersections at the busiest times per day and have somebody out there wearing the Gunther mascot. This guy's name is Gunther. Or the Scrooge mascot. Wave your sign, get horn honks. Like these are the little things that you can do to make a big impact on your customer acquisition costs and make your business more valuable.
I would have to think that referrals are a big part of this business as well.
I'm glad you brought that up, Justin. So we did a survey among our customers earlier this year. So we asked our customers, how many of you have neighbors who also get mosquito control services? And of those who said, yes, my neighbors do get services, we said, what kind of impact does that make on your results? And when surveyed, over 70% of customers said that they get better results for their own mosquito control treatment when their next door neighbors also get treatments. So for the sake of referrals, that's insanely compelling, because a typical small business is going to ask for referrals, and it's sort of a, hey, we can incentivize you. Maybe we'll do like a 50-50 program, a little reward for you, a little reward for the customer you refer. And that's all true with us too. But we also have, I think, the most compelling thing of all, which is what's in it for you? You have a 70% likelihood of being even happier with your results. So with that in mind, which neighbor are you going to introduce us to first?
One of my favorite things is when I talk to a client about mosquito control and they go, yeah, what else you got? There's no mosquitoes around here. I was in my neighbor's house the backyard the other day barbecue, and there's no mosquitoes. It's like, there's no mosquitoes because everyone is spraying. Like, because of this service, because there's so much demand here. Like, you didn't feel mosquitoes because everyone's spraying for mosquitoes nowadays.
Mosquitoes are just a piece of it. You know, mosquitoes are, for our business model, when you look at pest control, I mean, including mosquito control, it's a $26 billion industry. Mosquito control itself is $2 billion,
wow.
Which means that pest control excluding mosquito is $24 billion. It's literally 12 times the size of mosquito. Our unique advantage is that it's a lot easier to start a conversation. It's a much, much lower customer acquisition cost when you're targeting a mosquito customer. We use mosquito as marketing. It's profitable marketing because the mosquito service is profitable. You know, you do that the right way. But then you use that as a foot in the door to have all of these other conversations about ants, spiders, rodents, et cetera. Not to mention the holiday lighting.
Andy, very impressive. Love what you're building. I appreciate you taking the time away from building your company.
Absolutely. I just want to say, guys, I've been on a number of podcasts. I've been listening to your show for a while now. You guys have an excellent podcast. It's clear that you guys really appreciate the craft and you guys actually enjoy podcasts. I get a lot of value out of listening to your show. I appreciate what you guys are doing. An honor to be on here.
That warms my heart. Yeah, that's great to hear.
Thanks a lot. We do enjoy it. We love that. Look at the great people we get to hang out with. I spent an hour with Andy Fuller. Yeah, I got to get his autograph or something.
Right back at you.
Thanks for coming on, Andy.
Thanks, guys. Take care.